Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our play-by-play call of the day, the Indians on a roll, 13 in a row, Tom Hamilton.
Breaking ball, swung on, blasted, deep left center, this game is tied! A hanging breaking ball, and Jose Ramirez has done it again! A solo blast to left center, and we have got ourselves a 4-4 game.
And they made it 13 wins in a row. They are the first team since 1960 and 61 to have consecutive seasons with 13-game winning streaks. And then you have the Arizona Diamondbacks, who have not been behind in a game since August 25th. In their 12-game winning streak. So they don't have the longest winning streak, but they do have the longest streak going of not being behind. You tell the Ramirez home run tied up that game and eventually allowed Cleveland to come back and win it. But the D-backs haven't been behind. If Arizona gets five innings tonight, and I believe they've got the Dodgers tonight, if they go through five innings tonight without being behind, they'll set a major league record for most consecutive innings not being behind. Pretty amazing. 4:35 today, Dave Spadaro is going to join us to talk about the Eagles. And we'll get a rundown from him as we get ready for the season on that side of the state. We heard from Bill Hillgrove already with his take on the Steelers. And we'll get the take on the Eagles with Dave Spadaro. I understand Sean was trying to get a hold of Dave Spadaro, and he said he got an answer within 30 seconds.
I wish they all fell into place like that. Appreciate Spuds getting back to me so quick.
Well, I mean, that's quick.
Love it.
That is quick. Very pleased, by the way. Bring in Andrew Brandt from Sports Illustrated to talk a little bit about a couple of issues, including Zeke Elliott. And I just felt going into this, Andrew, all the way through, that because it's the domestic violence issue, there was no way on the planet that Roger Goodell was going to budge, because I feel like he botched the Josh Brown situation, felt like he botched the Ray Rice situation, and he didn't feel he could do that with this. With Ezekiel Elliott, obviously in the suspension, that looks like he'll get to play against the Giants and then be out six games after that. I don't really know all the details about Elliott. You'll know many more than I do, but I just got the sense that after, in my opinion, botching Ray Rice and botching the Brown thing, among others, that Roger Goodell was going to hold a hard line on this.
Yeah, I agree. I think nothing happens in a vacuum. Everything's related to something else. And it was 4 years ago when we talked about Ray Rice and how Goodell was excoriated for two games, and then it all changed with a policy that was six games. And I think what we can sort of fast forward to now is that Goodell listened to his advisors, had a hearing, gave him six games, and what came out last night was the appeal decision. Elliott appealed, and the appeal is upheld. I'm sorry, the appeal is denied. The six games are upheld. And really, reading that opinion, it was almost written for if a court, which seems to be happening, were to look at this. Henderson wrote that The process was in place from the new policy. The process was followed. Roger Goodell did not overstep his bounds. It was a fair arbitration process. It was an appeal. It was heard. It was denied. And there we go. So the CBA part of this is over. Now, as tend to be the case with the NFL and NFLPA the past 5 years, we have litigation. So yeah. We will see what happens. We're in court, and the court will figure this thing out. But I just think it's a really uphill battle for Elliott and the NFLPA with what's in place. And the Brady case strengthened commissioner power, not reduced it.
Exactly. Where do you think, as a power group, the NFLPA stands right now? I mean, are they essentially with their hands tied, powerless, or do they have more meat on the bone than we realize?
Well, I think the way to answer that is nothing new to people, but the NFL and the NFLPA leadership have zero relationship.
Right.
They don't like each other, they don't trust each other, and they don't communicate. So the only time they communicate is through legal briefs and a court hearing like in Texas yesterday. What does that mean? That means that everything's going to be a fight. I look at basketball, I look at baseball, I look at hockey. Those leaders don't necessarily like each other, or don't, you know, they don't have to go out for beers. They don't have to go out with their wives or husbands, but they have to talk. And they have to show some mutual respect. And that's not happening. So where we are is a consistently silent relationship except for combat. And,
yeah,
you know, I think we're going to see that all the way through till whatever happens with the next agreement. But we're a long way from that.
And you've also written that there's a need for a developmental league. But financially, I mean, is that even possible with these people?
Again, those people have to work it out. I think it's financially, yes, possible. You know, one part of it is we have such a limited off season in the NFL now in terms of players reporting to facilities.
Right.
Theoretically, you could even use NFL team facilities. You know, pick a place: Jacksonville, Miami, Tampa. Before the months of February and March, before the players come back in April. So I just think this is an obvious way to do something about these hundreds, thousand players cut the other day.
I want to ask you wrote another intriguing piece also on Matthew Stafford and his new contract.
Yeah.
Give us what you perceive, big picture, the groundbreaking part of a contract for a guy that's never been to the NFC Championship game, let alone a Super Bowl, but it is also a quarterback star league.
Well, I think we can lose the conversation about playoffs or whatever it is, because I've negotiated contracts my whole life. The last thing I get into when I'm an agent or a team is kind of a how good conversation.
Okay.
It's all about leverage. It's all about timing. It's all about what's ahead on the contract. The Lions did not want to face the franchise tag next year. The Lions did not want to face a quarterback in a lame duck year. The Lions know he's the most important player they've ever had, you know, maybe not ever, but certainly in the past 15 years.
Right.
And they made a decision. Now, I would love to see a fully guaranteed veteran contract at a high level. It hasn't happened.
Like Major League Baseball.
Like baseball or basketball. This is the closest thing there is.
Right.
So this is $50 million bonus, which is astounding. I don't think we've seen anything higher than mid-30s. This is 60 guaranteed at signing. This is $86 million locked in by year two. This is 92 guaranteed. I just think that this is the closest we'll get. For a while. Now, we can talk about Ryan and Rodgers coming up in a couple years, but this is an impressive deal. I go into it in my column on MMQB, all the things that it breaks new records for.
And that then brings me to a different position. It's a running back, and Le'Veon Bell is going to play this year in the franchise tag. He was offered another contract, at least the Steelers claim. What about another position besides quarterback? Does a Le'Veon Bell have the leverage as Stafford does?
No.
Right. That's exactly what I thought you'd say.
I heard this summer that Le'Veon Bell is a really tough one because the tag was, you know, for people who don't know, the tag now looks back 5 years to bring in the numbers instead of looking back 1 year. Usually that hurts the player. In this case, it helped him because they brought in all of Adrian Peterson's big numbers from 3-4 years ago. Now, the problem is there's no market for running backs. It's the most devalued position by far in the league.
Yep.
You get below Bell, and you're talking about $7 million top number for like a Sean McCoy or Doug Martin. That's it.
Yes.
And the best running backs for contract purposes are probably guys in their rookie deals like Elliott. Well, he's got other issues. But
yeah.
David Johnson. So
right.
We're going to have to see, but I can't believe that they were going to be able to get a deal done because there's no market. What are you comparing Le'Veon Bell to? He obviously wanted to be compared to something beyond a running back, which I understand, but that's not happening.
Andrew, an absolute pleasure. I know there's a certain window that we could get you in. We appreciate the fact you fit us in today with your great insight. Thanks.
Enjoyed it. Thanks, guys.
Andrew Brandt, Sports Illustrated, and Monday Morning Quarterback, MMQB. Great to have him on the show. First time we've had him on. Dave Spadaro joins us in the final half hour to discuss the Eagles. Back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Penn State football is on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The Penn State Nittany Lions are Big Ten champions.
Penn State football is sponsored by First National Insurance, Sealers Grove Ford, Click Associates, Murray Motor Chevrolet, Mifflinburg Auto Sales, Purdy Insurance Agency, Sunbury Motor Company, and W&L Subaru. The Nittany Lions are back in Beaver Stadium to take on Pitt Saturday. Kickoff is set for 3:30. We're on beginning at 2 o'clock on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
All right, great to have you with us. Our thanks to Andrew Brandt for joining us today, along with Bill Hillgrove. Dave Spadaro in the final half hour to join us. Looking forward to that on the show. We did get an email yesterday from, yeah, here it goes, from Mike Torres, who said, I was listening to Narduzzi's press conference, Pat Narduzzi, from Monday. A reporter asked about Max Brown. He began talking about something that happened on the second play of the game against YSU and then quickly changed his mind. And he wouldn't talk about it because he didn't want to give away anything to Penn State. I wasn't able to find the game on YouTube. I was wondering if Steve had a chance to watch the game and maybe provide some insight as to what Narduzzi was referencing on the second play. His direct quote was, you talk about the heat of the moment, go to that second play. No, I won't even talk about it. I won't even talk about it because it might give somebody else, such as Penn State, something else to think about. Next question. What happened on the second play was it was a bootleg. It was a play action roll right where they're trying to get the initial action flowing to the left. Then he boots it on a waggle and rolls right. He has three options on the play. One is a deep pass down the field to Way, Jester Way. And Way has a couple steps on the guy. Second option is Kadri Henderson. Third option is to run the ball. He picked the worst of the three options. And the way that play is supposed to be, just looking at it, it's the deep ball downfield that's supposed to be there. And he threw it to Henderson. He almost threw an interception, as a matter of fact. So that's the play he's referring to. So that was that listener question. That was the second play of the game. Then you sent me another one here from Jim.
Yes, our great friend Jim out in San Francisco. He says, I know it's way too early to ask such things, but I'd like to know, if Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan were to go undefeated in the regular season, but each lose one game to each other during the regular season, who would be the Big Ten East champion? My reason for asking, I normally wouldn't root for all of the Big Ten teams during the non-conference portion of the schedule. But if an out-of-conference loss would potentially break a tie down the road, it would easily change my rooting interests.
So if they all beat each other, and that's the only one they lose to? Anyway, in other words, like, I mean, it happened last year. It turned out that Michigan had the extra loss to Iowa. Who would win the Eastern Division Championship? Trying to think what the tie-breaking procedure is, because in the tie-breaking procedure, the first one's head-to-head.
Would number two maybe be point differential? Or
no, I don't think that comes into play. Obviously, you've beaten everybody else. I'd like to look at that and see. I don't know, for example, if what you do against the other division means something. In other words, my three wins in the other division were against the first, second, and third place team, or you know, yours were against 5, 6, and 7. I don't know. That's a good one. I'd have to look up that one, because that one is off the top of my head. I don't have an answer to. Yeah, I don't have the answer to that. I haven't thought about that. It's a good question, Jim. It's a really good question, but I can't answer it right now. I have no clue. I normally would have a Big Ten media guide here that would have all of that, all that tie-breaking stuff in there and so forth, and I don't have that in front of me right now. So I, yeah. Wow. That is putting the cart way ahead of the horse, but it is an intriguing question. But I don't think non-conference has anything to do with it. I don't think there's anything. No. Well, it might have something to do with it. It might have to do something with, maybe with overall record. No, I'll have to look it up. That way I give you the right answer instead of just guessing. That would not be right. So, that would not be right. So, we'll stay out of that for the moment. But I'll take a moment and look it up, Jim, just to know. Oh, that way you get the right answer out of it. Wonder if he's trying to figure out whether to root for Oklahoma or Penn State or Pitt. What, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out who he's trying to root for. But yeah, that's a really good question. I haven't really thought about it, though. It's one of those things where I don't think about it until November. So I'll slide out. I will look it up for it, though, just so I have an answer for you at some point. I think some of you know, you probably have heard of Craig Carton. WFAN and CBS Sportsnet carries the show in the morning, Boomer and Carton. Craig Carton was arrested by federal authorities this morning on charges he ripped off millions of dollars from investors by peddling bogus concert tickets in order to cover his own gambling debts, according to court papers. Carton, 48, and business partner Joseph Melli are accused of running a Ponzi scheme in which they use funds from new investors to repay earlier investors and other debts, according to the complaint filed by the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Together, Carton and Melli, a 43-year-old promoter, they say they ripped off at least $3.6 million from two investors, while on his own, Carton, according to them, misappropriated another $2 million from one of the two investors. The two solicited investments in ticket reselling enterprises, they claim, bought tickets to Katy Perry, Justin Bieber, Roger Waters, Metallica, Barbra Streisand, and Adele, and then resold them at huge profits. Now, according to the complaint, it says Carton falsely claimed to investors that he, sometimes on his own and sometimes through Melli, had access to millions of dollars worth of concert tickets at face value. They say that he forged documents showing purported ticket sale agreements between his and Melly's entities and concert promoters when actually none existed. Carton turned to the ticket scam, they say, in the middle of 2016 as a result of accruing millions of dollars worth of gambling-related debts to casinos and other third parties, according to court papers. They say on September 7th of last year, an email to Melly and another associate, Carton wrote that he was around $3 million in the hole and that he risked and lost $700 of investor money, referring to a $700,000 loss, and that he owed $825,000 as soon as possible to the person. He also indicated that he owed a total of $500 on the 12th to two casinos, referring to a $500,000 debt, according to the complaint. In addition to the SEC charges, Carton is charged along with another business associate, Michael Wright, with wire and securities fraud by prosecutors in Manhattan federal court. One of the unidentified investors is a hedge fund partner whom Carton first met in September of 2016 at a charity event. On October 2016, Carton texted Wright and Melly, identified as co-conspirator one in the Manhattan federal court, saying he struck gold. Carton wrote, quote, "Guys, I've done it. One investor ready committed $10 million liquid and $40 million LOC, line of credit, with $50 million if needed. I need some info, list of shows that we can 100% prove access to tickets, how many, when, and how it's returned, and predicted success." They say that he allegedly used the hedge fund investments to pay off his casino debts. Wow.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our thanks to Andrew Brandt, Sports Illustrated, for joining us in the previous half hour. Hour ago, we had Bill Hillgrove on, voice of Pitt Football and the Steelers. And now it's time to take a look at the Eagles with Dave Spadaro. Let's bring in Dave. Dave, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Hey, it's great to be here, and I think we're all in the same boat. Can't wait for the NFL season to begin.
Yeah, let's get rolling with this. The Eagles have made a few moves along the way. Are they a better football team after the moves based on what you know about the personnel they brought in?
You know, I mean, I would certainly expect them to be better. They upgraded wide receiver tremendously. I think they've upgraded cornerback significantly. I think the defensive line has a chance to be much better than it was last year. And the offensive line isn't facing a situation where the right tackle, Lane Johnson, is looking at a 10-game suspension. So I do think they're better now. Are they where they want to be from a top-to-bottom of the roster standpoint? No. I mean, they still have big question marks, certainly at running back. I think there's some age up front that you look at and say, I hope these guys can hold up. I think the safeties, you wonder if there's enough depth there. But for the most part, I do think they are a better football team. Hopefully for the Eagles, that makes that, you know, that becomes a reality in the wins and losses.
With the trade of Matthews to Buffalo, are they better at corner now after making that move, in your opinion?
Oh my gosh, way better. Ronald Darby is so much more athletic and instinctive and competitive, and he gives them a chance against all of these elite speed receivers that they're going to face. And by the way, as much as I love Jordan Matthews, he wasn't the prime piece in that deal. It was a third-round draft pick. So, I mean, the Eagles really paid a stiff price to go get Ron Darby. And I do think there will be challenges. I think that teams will throw the ball up for grabs when he's matched up against these bigger receivers and you can win in the jump ball contest. But yeah, Ron Darby is far superior. And then I think adding Dexter McDougal late in the preseason from the New York Jets gives the Eagles a chance to match up against all of these little slot receivers that they're going to see. I don't know if he's ready to go on Sunday, But Jamison Crowder from Washington is a really, really difficult matchup, and the Eagles didn't have anybody on the roster who had that kind of quickness. So McDougal brings a different level of athletic ability as well. The Eagles just were not athletic enough at cornerback last year. And then they've also got the young kids, Rasul Douglas, who's developing, and, of course, Sidney Jones, who's recovering from his injury.
Interesting about Matthews, every quarterback, especially a young one, has that security blanket guy that when they feel they need something, they seem to look for him. Matthews seemed to be Carson Wentz's kind of guy in that regard. Who now can fill that role for a young quarterback? Because a veteran doesn't care. They'll put it all over the place to anybody.
Yeah, agreed with you on that. And I think that Jordan missed a couple of games late in the year. He had the ankle injury or the knee injury. And Carson really developed a great rapport with Zach Ertz. So I think that is one piece of the puzzle. I think, obviously, having Alshon Jeffrey here as the legitimate number one go-to receiver will make a big difference for Carson because he can throw the ball up and it doesn't have to be perfect. And the window is larger. And Alshon's going to make those tough catches. So I think Alshon will make a gigantic difference. And then having Torrey Smith with that deep speed, all of those players combined will certainly, I believe, make up for the loss of Jordan Matthews.
All right, so when you look at them coming out of camp, give me a couple guys that, you know, they're not going to be big contributors, but you know what? In the preseason games when they had a chance, they showed you a little something, and that's why they made the roster. Who would that be?
Well, I think Jalen Watkins probably earned a job in that last preseason game. He can play a little bit of safety, he can play a little bit of cornerback, can help you on special teams. I would tell you that Mac Hollins, the rookie from North Carolina, probably will be the fourth receiver. So he may not get a ton of reps there, but he'll get a lot of reps on special teams. I look at somebody like Chris Maragos, who's an ace on special teams. I look at Chris Long, who will be a third or fourth defensive end, part of that rotation. Somebody like Bo Allen, defensive tackle, part of that rotation. Nelson Agholor, I think, is a really fascinating player to watch. He doesn't have all the pressure. He doesn't have to catch 85, 90 passes. He's going to be the slot receiver. But when they throw him the football, he's got to catch it. He's got to move the chains. He's got to be tough inside. He's got to give them quickness. Those are the players I think will kind of be a change of pace kind of players, along with, you know, Wendell Smallwood at running back. Won't carry the ball 20 times a game, but I think at the end of the year, he will be the leading ground gainer for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Is there, did you see and sense Agholor maybe was a little bit more relaxed in camp in the preseason games or putting pressure on himself? How did he seem to you?
Yeah, I thought in the preseason games he was okay. I mean, he was disappointing in Green Bay and then, you know, fine after that. Training camp, he was much, much better. And look, last year, let's go back to last year. He comes in, a lot of expectation. He gets in that off-the-field incident that really marred his off-season. Then he just starts dropping the football and hears it from the crowd and just couldn't get out of his own way. And I think it all built up and he just had to step away from things. And so I think having Alshon Jeffrey here, look, Alshon Jeffrey is the one with all the pressure. Torrey Smith right. is the veteran who's got a lot of pressure. Nelson Agholor just has to catch 35 passes and get a lot of first downs, and everybody will say, boy, Nelson Agholor has come such a long way. He's not going to be measured by pure numbers. He's going to be measured by the number of times he takes advantage when the ball is thrown his way.
Dave, where are the Eagles better today than they were a year ago? Conversely, where are you concerned?
As we said, cornerback, I think they're better. I think they're clearly better at wide receiver, and I do think they're better at the at the defensive line position. I don't know if they're better at running back. I don't know if they've gotten a lot of depth at linebacker. You know, we've got to see how the scheme changes in the red zone. And then there's the intangibles. Look, they were 1-7 on the road last year. They blew games on the road in Detroit and in Dallas. They couldn't take advantage of a takeaway against the New York Giants. They were inside the 20-yard line. They had a chance to win the game in Baltimore. They didn't win any of those games. So from an intangible standpoint, where are they on the maturity level? Where is the game plan? How is Doug Peterson going to call plays in the red zone, where they were 24th in the league in touchdown efficiency? That is not going to get it done. So, you know, I think Washington's a perfect test. The Redskins have won 5 straight games against the Eagles. The Eagles haven't won at FedEx Field since 2013. They've been outscored 23-6 in those first quarters of those 3 games. So let's see how they come out and play and handle the expectations in year 2 of Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson.
In the growth of Carson Wentz and the maturation of Carson Wentz, where do you see him as a better quarterback than even when we saw in December last year?
I mean, I got to tell you, I think he's the most polished prospect in a Philadelphia Eagles uniform at this stage of his career in the 30 years that I've covered the Eagles. And that goes back to the days of Jaws and then Randall and then the quarterbacks up until Donovan. And then when Donovan was done, all the way through the Michael Vicks and the Kevin Cobbs and the Nick Foles, Sam Bradford, Mark Sanchez, etc. I just think that this kid is really special. He gets it from a big picture standpoint. He's a student of the game. He wants to be a great quarterback. He's not interested in all the fanfare. He's extremely competitive. And oh, by the way, he's 6'5", 240, great arm, good athlete, can escape in the pocket. He's not going to be fooled on game days. I think the one area where he really needs to get better is where he struggled last year was when he started slowly, a couple of interceptions against Minnesota, a couple of interceptions against the New York Giants, played poorly on the road in Cincinnati, needs to be better early in games, and then we need to see him coming down the stretch of games and putting the ball in the end zone and winning games for the Eagles. And I think that's going to be a natural step for Carson Wentz this season.
Does the league, in your opinion, have more parity right now? I mean, I know the Patriots are the defending champions again, but are you seeing teams closer together now, whether it's good or bad, but closer together?
I don't know, because I look and I wonder how good can the Jets be, and where are the Chicago Bears, and, you know, the Buffalo Bills are really bad, and some of these, so there's some bottom feeders that are very concerning. The San Francisco 49ers, Los Angeles Rams. I mean, that's 5 teams right off the bat. That's more than a sixth of the league. I think in the NFC East, it is as competitive as I've seen. There hasn't been a repeat winner since 2003, 2004. I think all 4 teams have a chance to win it. So in the immediate neighborhood, yeah, the NFC East is as balanced as I've seen it in a long, long time.
What do you think of the Elliott suspension and how the league has handled it?
You know, I feel for the Giants fans out there. I know that they're not pleased that Ezekiel Elliott is eligible to play in this game. My expectation is that the legal red tape will allow Ezekiel Elliott to play the entire season. And then we'll go through the whole legal process next year and find out where he stands. And it could very well get knocked down from 6 games, but I applaud what Harold Henderson did yesterday, upholding the 6-game suspension. It just sounds like there's a whole lot of legal wrangling and maneuvering to get through until we get to the final resolution here.
Dave, it's always a pleasure. It's great to hear you on the other end, and thanks a lot for the great information.
Hey, my pleasure. Anytime at all you call, I'm ready to go.
Dave, thanks so much. Dave Spadaro, what a great job he does. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Okay, so let me get this straight now. And first of all, our thanks to Dave Spadaro. Talking about the Eagles, our thanks to Bill Hillgrove today. We talked Pitt football and Steeler football with the legendary voice. And also our thanks to Andrew Brand from Sports Illustrated joining us today with great insight. Let me get this straight.
Okay.
Earlier in the show, during our commercial break, you played a promo for Bucknell football on Eagle 107 where Doug Birdsong describes a game-changing interception.
That's
correct?
Right. Yes.
Yeah. You then played a Penn State football promo because Penn State football airs on WKOK with the play-by-play of the end where they win the Big Ten championship, correct?
Bingo.
Then later on, you played a Shikellamy football promo where the announcer is describing a 32-yard field goal in the second quarter. Okay, what am I missing here? When I first heard it, I thought, it's got to be the game winner. Then I thought, well, maybe it's a 50-yarder. Okay, Sean, what am I missing?
Yeah, when I was going through the Sunbury Motors game night highlights last Friday night, I saw that too, and I think, oh, I don't know if we really need that in there. Well, we want to give the kids some credit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that part. But to promote the next game, that's for the one we picked? Come watch us kick field goals? What? No?
Maybe it was a timing issue. Maybe it's a timing issue, just the length of the highlight, it fit. It just has to be in a certain period of time.
Maybe it's the one he got right.
Or it could be that. Yeah, but you should have seen it split those uprights.
No, I stopped picturing it when I heard it was a 32-yard field goal in the middle of the game. I thought, okay. Yeah, Tyler Davis kicked a 47-yarder. It didn't make the cut on our thing.
It did not.
So, like, okay.
Big Ten champions had more pop and sizzle to it. That's the grabber.
Well, we'll find out how much pop and sizzle there is this weekend. Obviously, people will be shoehorned into the stadium. The weather looks like it's going to be great for the game on Saturday. It's going to be a good second test to go out there. I think both coaches will walk out of the game knowing pretty much where they are with their football teams, with their respective conference seasons coming up. Although for Pitt, they're going to go right from Penn State into Oklahoma State. So they've got back-to-back top 10 teams. Oklahoma State, they'll get them at home. But, I mean, that's two really tough games back-to-back. And maybe their best defensive player, Jordan Whitehead, can't play either game because of the suspension. But, I mean, everybody's known that going in, that that's how it was going to be. So both coaches, I think, are going to walk out with a better idea where their football teams are, what they need to work on after a game like this on Saturday. You know, Penn State, of course, the stakes are very high. And I talked about this yesterday. Don't be lulled into a narrative that just because, you know, Pitt has talked this up a lot. And they have. They've talked it up a lot, and I completely understand why they've talked it up a lot. And James Franklin has talked about, okay, here's the next week.
don't get lulled into thinking one team gets it and the other one doesn't. That's far from the truth. James Franklin's trying to win championships here. So you don't throw, like, here it is, it's Pitt Week, let's throw all the eggs into the basket. No, that's not what you do. What you do is you go out and you go to work like you go to work every week. The same approach that you used for Ohio State last year is the same approach you used for Purdue, the same approach you used for Indiana, the same approach you used for Rutgers, same approach you used for Michigan State, the same approach you used for Wisconsin, and then the same approach for USC.
Well, I loved what he said in the press conference yesterday, and we aired a little bit of it today in the Inside Penn State Athletics segment, that we're just taking it one day at a time, but it's all about everybody maximizing their efforts, and when you put your head on the pillow at night, there's no question that you gave everything you did today.
But these are not mechanical practices, Sean. I think people are thinking that, okay, let's look at the Pitt offense. Let's go to the play card. Run play 8. Ah, oh, very nice. Okay, that's good job. All right, let's go to the play card. Play 9. Line up like that. Okay, good. No, that's not how a Penn State practice goes. Penn State practice is one of high energy, pace, no standing around. And if a player does something wrong, believe me, it's pointed out in very direct terms. But if a player does something right and it's a big play, that play is celebrated. You're talking high fives all over the place, chest bumps, things like that. It only takes a few seconds and then they go to the next play. But there is an emotion in practice that I don't think people understand. And I can understand why they don't, because there isn't a lot of access to practice. I mean, some people get to see one here and there now. The media gets to go to see a little bit on every Wednesday. But when you're there every day, there is already a built-in emotion in the practice to begin with, where it is not a sterile, staid environment. And I think people got the impression last year that Pitt is flying around that practice field and it means everything to them and they're going to get it done because they know what this game means, which I understand you thinking that. And that Penn State was, it's another week, let's get it done. Okay, we're up to play 12 in the card, run the play. Okay, very good. Let's go to the next drill. That's not how a Penn State practice goes. A Penn State practice for Akron is very much like the Penn State practice for Pitt, because they already have that built-in pace, energy, and emotion in the practice anyway. In fact, I think if Penn State put any more emotion into the practice, it would be counterproductive. So that's why I want people to understand the ability, part of the ability to get the game and the importance and the significance of the game is to properly prepare for the game so that when you run out, you're ready. Penn State already is a team that plays with emotion anyway, because they practice with emotion and pace.
We are your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.